Will they find a home? Sponsored by GEICO. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, hello. My goodness. If it isn't,
what?
The third or fourth week of February, the fourth. And the last. Wow. Man, oh man. We're getting to that point where winter is now just kind of a drag. At least for me. I always enjoy the first part of the winter. You're like, oh boy, all right, it's getting cooler out. You're starting to smell fires like from neighbors' chimneys and stuff outside. That's always nice. You got Thanksgiving, then the Christmas season's wonderful with the cold weather and the snow and whatever. And then when January rolls around, you're like, all right, getting pretty bitter cold. But, you know, to be expected, winter just kind of feels like it just started. But now, February and March, just, all right, let's move on, huh? Especially March. March and April in some ways are my least favorite months because of the weather. It's just like, whenever the end of March or the beginning of April roll around, I'm always like, it should be warm. And quite often it isn't. It can still get really chilly. Even into May, especially if you live somewhere like Chicago, geez, where summer doesn't start until July 1st sometimes. And then winter begins September 1st. Man. But hey, that's all right. We'll keep things cozy and comfortable. And dare I say hot. Because this week's guest, oh boy, what a looker. What a looker. I believe recently named the most attractive person on the planet by Attractive People magazine. And hey, that's no slight reward there. That's a big accomplishment. Attractive People magazine naming you a most attractive person of the year on the planet. And that person is our guest today. Of course, I'm talking about you. Thank you for being here. If it's your first time here, welcome. If you're a return visitor, my gosh, great to see you again. We've got some fun stuff this week. And it starts with this week's sponsor. Oh, it's a good one. Our sponsor this week, a cup. Don't you love, aren't you thankful for cups? Because listen, without cups, I mean, what would we drink out of? We'd have to either just put our mouths right there on some faucets or what are you going to do? Pour a soda into your hands and sip it out of your hands? No, you need a cup, don't you? And thank goodness we've got them. I guess maybe what if we didn't have cups, we just had bowls? But then you would feel like a dog or a cat, wouldn't you? So, yeah. I mean, without cups, maybe we would all be drinking out of like giant hamster bottles. Where they would sort of be hanging in your house, and you would walk up and tilt your head up and just sip from one of those. That wouldn't be as good. You want a cup. And thank goodness, I mean, if we didn't have cups, we'd just be pouring liquids all over the place, and that can get messy and sticky. And let's not forget, let's say you want some coffee. I mean, cups also kind of protect us a little bit from the temperature of the beverage, don't they? So, I know what you're thinking. Well, Josh, when I fill a coffee mug with coffee, it gets hot. Yeah, sure it does. But just think about how hot it would be if you poured that coffee straight into your hands. That's all I'm saying here. So I certainly appreciate a cup for being our sponsor. I hope you enjoy a cup or many. This week. And if I seem giddy today, it's because, I am. I'm in a good mood. There's a lot to be thankful for and a lot to enjoy out there. And I hope Well, you certainly look good. I hope you're feeling good, and I hope you're enjoying many things out there. We've got a special treat this week in regards to our visit to Vocabulary Station. Boy, it's brisk. Brisk on this train, but because what we're doing today is standing. We're not in the car itself. I think we've stopped. It was a shorter. It felt like a shorter trip this week, didn't it? Just a couple of toots, not the whole thing. But that's all right. Oh, I see what's happened. It's there's something faulty up there. We're gonna have to walk the rest of the way to Vocabulary Station, but that's okay. We've got our jackets and our hats, and we'll be fine. Today's visit to Vocabulary Station includes two submissions. One is the word itself. The other is a very special thing, and I think we'll have fun with it. But I'd like to get to the word first. It comes to us from Carly, and I'm going to teach. We'll go ahead and do the noun and the verb of this. The noun is defenestration. Defenestration. Now, you might be familiar with the word fenestration. It actually came up on the air on the Bob and Tom show a week or so ago where Tom mentioned fenestration, which is the arrangement of windows and doors, particularly on the elevated parts of a building. So if you're standing on a sidewalk and you're looking up at, say, a large hotel, you could go, oh, my, look at the unique fenestration there. And what you're talking about is how the windows are. Not necessarily the style of glass, but how they are arranged on the front of the building, like on the face of the building, that kind of thing. And, of course, the same goes. You can have indoor fenestration, which would be how the doors are arranged, all that stuff. So defenestration is fenestration being sort of the root there. Defenestration means, this is a fascinating word, the act of throwing something or someone out of a window. So if a man were to toss his enemy, let's say there was a bad guy and he was, my goodness, doing some awful things in a hotel room, and a hero came in and said, we can't have this, and he defenestrated a man, it means he threw him right out the window. How about that? Now, it can also mean like an immediate dismissal or expulsion from public office or a job. It can mean that. It can mean like a quick ejection from, or removal, I should say. Defenestration. So some of you might be a lot happier at work if upper management were defenestrated from the office. Now, I don't mean thrown out the window, although that might make some of you happy to watch your boss plummet too. But if they were removed from their role there, their position, you can defenestrate somebody from their position. So I think it's great. Defenestration. It sounds so much cooler than, I threw a guy out the window. Man, I defenestrated that dude. And if you know what it means when they say it, you go, oh my gosh, what were the circumstances there? Now, thank you, Carly, for letting me for filling us in on that word. And we received a special treat from John. Oh no, I'm sorry, not John. From Zachary. Zachary, we'll get to John's thing later. Zachary writes that he's enjoying the off the wall words that we come across on when we visit Vocabulary Station. And he goes on to say, I'm not sure if my creative writing professor from college would be amused or ashamed by this. And what he's referring to is a quick story. It looks to be. I have not read it all because I wanted to read it for the first time on the, here right along with you. But it looks to be a quick story where he has used every Vocabulary Station word that we've done since the beginning of this podcast. So that would be about 19 or something like that. Because defenestration, I think that's the 20th. I was not aware of that one yet. So maybe I'll add that in here somewhere. Zachary, I don't mean to take liberties with your art here, but I may, if there's a spot here where I think defenestration works, I'll go ahead and jam it in. And I have a feeling the fun of this story will be that these words really are jammed in where they where maybe they shouldn't be. We'll find out. But what a fun thing. And he says to keep Vocabulary Station going. And guess what? It will. But I don't know if you guys noticed on the right here, there's been some construction going on. So I think some changes are afoot, but they're all positive changes. I looked at some of the plans, and I was there during the permit hearings, and everything, all the permits have been granted. The changes are taking place, and I think everyone's going to really like them. Although Vocabulary Station, I warn you, Vocabulary Station is in the process of being torn down, but something much bigger and, dare I say, better is being constructed. So, exciting stuff. Anyway, Zachary threatens to send these every month, but maybe I'll get him to send them every. I'll make it harder on him, and I'll let him know. Hey, man, maybe every 20 words you can write. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, without further ado, this is Zachary's story, where he uses the first 19 words from Vocabulary Station. An awkward demeanor is mal juste for describing my approach to women. I know from experience that it is always a mistake to nictate in the direction of a Xantippe. The last time I did, in her objurgatory leer, sent horripilation throughout my senses as an omnium gatherum of nervous energy through my mind into a state of farctate. Ever since high school, my condition as an assersicomic and a recurring tendency to be a blatherskite spouting sesquipedalian language has made my dating life difficult. I also have an off-putting mesophonia brought on by people who mispronounce common words. Even when I find myself successful in securing a date, my brumotactylophobia sends my date out of the restaurant in a frightened rush before she had even touched her noisette. I'm laughing because I don't remember if that's actually how it's pronounced. Her reaction could also have been caused by learning of my record for committing macropicide. But who knows? Maybe one day I'll find that special someone to hang the finial dobro with. That will be an unsomatic day indeed. In spite of myself, it will remain my habitude to be my awkward self, because that is what makes me unique. And if things get too tough, I shall commit self-defenestration. All right. Yes, that does deserve some applause and some yays. Indeed. My goodness, Zachary. Now, I bet even the most careful and focused listener of that Josh Arnold podcast would have difficulty telling you exactly what happens in that little story there. I did, and I know all the meaning of all those words. Which brings up an interesting point. That perhaps what we learn at Vocabulary Station should be used sparingly. So, Zachary, this was awesome. I would like to think that your college professor would be both amused, a little annoyed at you, but would certainly be proud of you for taking the time to do that and for practicing context and all that good stuff. Just awesome work. You misspelled Xantippe. Okay, let's... wonderful stuff, Zachary. Thank you. And yes, we'll have to make that a regular thing, whether it be every 10 words, every 20, whatever. How fun. Thank you for that. And thank you, Carly, for this week's word, defenestration, throwing someone or something out of a window. How awesome is that? This is not defenestration per se, but I was reminded recently of one of my favorite punk songs by a group called the Bouncing Souls, who I'm a fan of. They're just fun and cool. And if you like punk, you're probably aware of them. They're not like crazy heavy punk, I guess they can be, but they are certainly, they've got that raw sort of garage band feel to them or whatever. Just a blast. But they have a song that I think is so punk rock. It's called, you know what? I don't remember if this is the title, but pretty much the lyrics are, the chorus is, who's going to throw the toilet off the roof? And they just keep chanting, who's going to throw the toilet? Who's going to throw the toilet off the roof? And I just love, I guarantee they were at a party and they were throwing things off the roof and they had this old toilet and they went and somebody said, who's going to throw the toilet off the roof? And they did it. And to me, that's just so crazy and fun and just a great party song. And they went, you know what? We just got to write a song about this, which is in itself sort of punk rock because it's not, I would imagine it's not universally appealing or all that saleable. If a band went up to their producer and went, hey, we're going to do a song about throwing a toilet off the roof. I'm like, what? So awesome. So, again, not defenestration, but I just wanted to fill you in on that little song I enjoy. You know what else I enjoyed? Let's get right to it. What I enjoyed this week. Oh. Now, nobody's dancing down the street today. But if you look up, you can see many people being defenestrated from windows. And they're happy about it. Look at them. They're spilling out of windows from that skyscraper there. And you know why they're happy? Because they're landing. They're landing in giant ice cream sundaes. Isn't that nice? Oh, my. So, yes, they are defenestrating themselves. Some are deciding that they want to be defenestrated. Hey, toss me out into that ice cream sundae, will you? Oh, they're plummeting and laughing and just landing into that soft, delicious ice cream with the whipped cream and the syrup and whatever you like. What a happy thing. Ugh. What would... I often wonder what my therapist would say about these images that I insist on doing whenever that music plays. But I can't help it. I enjoy that music. And you know what else I enjoy? I'm about to tell you what I enjoyed this week. A few things. Did anybody watch the outdoor hockey games that the NHL put on this weekend? Terrific. So fun. Beautiful scenery. Good hockey. It had to have been a blast for those guys to be playing outdoors. A lot of them grew up in Canada or northern Minnesota or places like that where they would play pond hockey or lake hockey. And this must have been so fun for them. And it sure was great to watch. Oh, and it was the Sunday game was a blowout. I think Boston won 7-2, but still just so enjoyable. And congratulations to the NHL for putting on a great event. I enjoyed that. One thing I'd really like to tell you about is a comedy special. And, you know, because I do comedy for a living, I don't watch as much comedy as I probably should. I see plenty. I see a lot, particularly, and you know, not as much in this last year, but because I would travel and do comedy and I would watch comedians who would perform before me or after me or whatever. And it was great getting to watch a lot of live comedy. But when it comes down to sitting down and watching a comedy special on Netflix or something, I don't do it as often as I probably should because it's probably the same reason why if you are, my brother John for a long time did landscaping and he did it for a living and he was very skilled at it and he went to school for it and he learned a lot about botany different, you know, and science and all that stuff and aesthetics when it comes to, you know, where to put certain plants and what looks best and all that stuff. He was very good at it. But when he came home, the last thing he wanted to do was cut his own grass. And I remember my parents going, hey, when are you going to come over and cut the grass? And he would just be like, geez, why do I have to come over? That's what I do for my job. So there's a little bit of that feeling when I watch comedy. It's like, hey, I've studied a lot and but I still get a lot of joy out of watching, watching good comedy. I do. I just don't do it as often. But I recently watched a couple special I'd love to steer you towards is Greg Warren's Where the Field Corn Grows on Amazon Prime. It is wonderfully funny. So good. We often joke on the air about how much we dislike Greg Warren. And the reason we do that is because we all love Greg Warren to death. So it's funny to us to be to pretend like we don't care for him and that he's a jerk or whatever. Because he's also not a jerk. He's quite generous and sweet and funny and nice. So, yeah. Anyway, he is one of my best friends. I should say that. So they're. But I don't want you to think that I'm biased. This is a special that had I never known Greg, if I watched it, I would be laughing out loud. And I did laugh out loud a lot at it. But the special I watched this week, I'm sure most of you are familiar with this guy. And some of you may even go, oh, I don't think he's for me. But I'll tell you what, I am a sucker for this guy's comedy. I love it. And I watched his newest special and laughed out loud a lot. I'm talking about Bob Zaney, and he has a new Dry Bar special. Dry Bar is putting out terrific comedy specials. They've got a bit of an angle. The angle is that they're clean, so families can watch them. And in fact, in this special, there are 13-year-olds and 10-year-olds and stuff in the audience. But do not confuse clean with lame or boring or because those specials aren't. And Bob's certainly isn't. It is. I found it to be hysterical, but I also find Bob to be so funny. And what I love about this special, it's called I Think I Handled That Well, and you can find it at Vimeo and other. If you just Google Bob Zaney, I Think I Handled That Well, or Bob Zaney Comedy Special, you'll find it. And I really recommend it. It's about 38 minutes long, and it is a pure celebration of what I kind of call old style or classic comedy. He wears a suit, and you don't see that as much as you used to. That used to be the standard for comedians, but now only a select few do it. And I've always loved that. I would eventually like to be. I would like to be a guy who wore a suit on stage. I would. I'm not, though, because you know, maybe I should try it at some point. Maybe I will. But he wears a suit and he tells jokes that, you know, a quick setup and a quick punchline. They can be very rapid fire. And there's not a ton of insight into his own personal life. It's mostly just, I am here to make you laugh. I am here to throw as many jokes at you as possible. And for me, the vast majority totally work. They totally land for me because they're funny, but they're also, as I said, a celebration of comedy. Kind of like I always said that some of the funniest parts of the Austin Powers movies are the jokes that you see coming from a mile away, and there are plenty, because it's just reveling in the joy of humor and of comedy and taking these old jokes and bringing them to life. And so there is some of that in Bob's act, and I don't mean that disparagingly at all. To me, it's wonderful. It takes a tremendous amount of skill to do straight jokes, to just do flat out set up punchline comedy. And there's a good amount of puns and things like that that some of you might go, okay, this isn't really my cup of tea. But if you sit back and you just sort of let it wash over you, and the idea that, hey, this is pure comedy, where I'm just putting it out there. You're not going to learn too much about me. You're not going to learn too much about yourself. Let's just have some laughs. If you watch it like that, I think you're going to find it infectious. And Bob does some classic almost vaudevillian things. I don't think he would care to hear this. He even almost resembles like an old time comedian, sort of a WC. He's got sort of a WC Fields air about him, or an Oliver Hardy air about him. And again, that might not sound super flattering, but it totally fits and it works so well. I just found this to be a hugely successful special, and I hope you do too. Bob Zaney, I think I handled that well. Bob Zaney, as some of you are familiar with, would call in to the Bob and Tom Show weekly with the Zaney Report. And part of the fun of that was, I think the guys liked it when he bombed. They were merciless. If you ever heard some of those old Bob Zaney reports, there were times where they got a lot of mileage out of the fact that a joke didn't work, or that, and they really would beat him up. And so, if you only know Bob from the Zaney Report from the Bob and Tom Show, you might think he's a bit of a welcome mat, but when you watch his stand-up, you know that it's anything but. He is in complete control. He'll let the audience have it. He'll tease them. He's also self-deprecating at the same time, and it's just terrific. Just so much fun. So instead of watching a rerun of Law & Order SVU or whatever, give this 38-minute special a chance. Check it out. Bob Zaney, I think I handled that well. It's, boy, it scratched me where I itch, if you will. I also enjoyed something, I guess I'll say something in real life this week, and it got me, thinking back to my youth. My neighborhood's interesting. It's essentially one long street with a cul-de-sac at the end. So there's not a ton of through traffic. And there's also a fair amount of children that live in the neighborhood, and they will play anywhere they damn well please. And I'm not complaining. I'm not the old grumpy neighbor that, the get off my lawn type guy, but they do, for whatever reason, these kids feel comfortable enough, which says a lot about the neighborhood I live in, that, people are friendly and comfortable and they feel safe and everything like that. But these kids will, I've walked out of my house. They'll play anywhere. They play in anybody's yard at any time. And I have walked out of my house before to get the mail, and six neighborhood kids were sitting on my porch. They were just sitting on my porch talking. And I looked at them and they looked at me, and I didn't really say anything. I went to the mailbox, got my mail, and they continued chatting it up. And I walked by them again and walked right into my house, and they just stayed out there. It's somewhat brazen, but they weren't doing anything wrong. They weren't. It makes me a little nervous and like, oh boy, what, in that my gutter falls off and hits one of them in the head. Maybe I have a problem, but I'll get umbrella insurance and I won't worry about it. So so anyway. We got a lot of snow here, and it was about 10 inches or so. And I've got my backyard is fairly wooded, but there's enough space, and there are a couple really steep hills that are perfect for sledding. And so the neighborhood kids will sled in my backyard. And on a Saturday or Sunday morning, it's always fun because Saturday and Sunday mornings are my day to take my time cooking breakfast, and I love it. I love it. Typically what I do, and this may bum some of you out because I'm giving you a true peek at what Josh Arnold eats, as opposed to what Tom would have you believe I eat. I typically make my own breakfast potatoes, and lately they've been sweet potatoes, so I skin sweet potatoes and I dice them, and I throw them in my cast iron skillet, and hash brown them up, if you will. In the meantime, I also make three or four eggs, And you know what? Lately, it's been three, because every time I make four, I go, one too many eggs. So lately I've gone, all right, three should be fine. So I either scramble them or do sunny side up. I also, if I'm feeling froggy, I will poach. I'll poach them. And then I put those over the potatoes, and sometimes I'll mix, if I'm using regular potatoes, not sweet, I'll dice up some green pepper and onion and throw that in there. And then I'll make, I treat myself to this really good bacon it's a great brand called Applegate, where it just terrific stuff. It is pricey, but that's, you know, I think there are some things where you go, yeah, it's the weekend. I'm going to treat myself. And while I'm cooking, I have a cup of coffee, and I just love it. It's really relaxing. It's a great way to start a Saturday and Sunday. And this weekend was particularly nice because there was so much snow on the ground and the sun was shining. So you get that wonderful, just so much sunlight, and just it really brightens up the inside, you know. And so it was a nice, cheery kitchen while I was. And the kids were outside sledding, and it was so fun every now and again while I'm dicing or while I'm cleaning a dish, you know, during the cooking process, to look out and see these kids do exactly what my brothers and I or my friends and I would do when we were their age, when we were 8 or 10 or 12, sledding, how they would go down a sled on their own, and then they would go, hey, I'm going to try going head first, and then they would go, let's see how many of us we can cram into one sled and go down, and then let's do a train where I hang onto the front of your sled and somebody hangs onto the back of mine, and they all... And it was just really not, it was really fun to watch. And they were having a great time laughing, wrecking into each other. And it just brought back really terrific memories of being a kid on snow days. And how fun that was getting, first off, boy, finding out that you had a snow day. Amazing. Amazing. Now, there were two types of snow days. One was more common than the other, and that was the I hope we have a snow day, where the night before there's all this talk of snow, and you go, man, it might be enough to cancel school. There might just be. But you don't stay up too late because you're not sure if it's going to happen. I should actually say there are three snow days. So the first one is you weren't sure if it was going to happen. So you went to bed at your regular time, but there was this sort of hopefulness of, man, I sure would love for tomorrow to be a snow day. And you go to sleep, and then you either wake up at your regular time and find out, you know, you listen for the school postings on the radio or on television to see if your school was closed. So you wake up at your regular time and you watch TV or listen to the radio and go, all right, and you just look for your name. Look for the school. I remember my school was in the Rockwood School District, and they wouldn't really call off individual schools. They would just say Rockwood School District closed. And I remember sometimes turning on the radio or the TV, and they'd be on the S's. Like, I have to wait for them to go all the way through the alphabet before I find out if Rockwood is off. Other times, you'd wake up and go, what the heck? It's 7:20. It must be a snow day. My mom let me sleep in. And, so that was great. You excited about that? The other two types of snow days, there's one where you knew it was going to be a snow day. The weather was so bad the night before, they went, school's canceled tomorrow. Oh, then it was a real party that night. You could stay up as late as you liked, knew that you had the next day off to go sledding or whatever. And boy, just so fun staying up late on a school night when you normally were unable to. And then the third type, of course, is and this is the rarest one, I think. At least it feels like it was for me when I was a kid. The out-of-nowhere snow day, where there was no talk of snow or ice on the weather the night before. Man, I really feel like I can only remember like this happening twice, where you were just completely oblivious of any weather. Maybe it wasn't even predicted. Maybe this was a total surprise to everybody, the meteorologists and all, and... you would be woken up by your parents, or you know, either the regular time going, hey, you can sleep in, it's a snow day. What? Or you woke up at 8, and you went, what the heck's going on? And you walk out, and your parents go, yeah, it's a snow day. And you look, and sure enough, snow or ice on the ground. You're like, oh, my gosh, what a terrific surprise. How cool is that? I think my favorite of the three would have been the we knew it was a snow day coming, that thing. Oh, my, because that night, just stay up and watch movies or play. I'm 43, so, boy, am I 43 or 42? I was born in 78. I will be 43 in May. Jeez. Anybody smell oranges? So I am 42, and so Super Nintendo, just stay up late playing Super Nintendo with your brothers or your friend. Ah, what a great time. And then you knew that you had the whole next day to just do whatever you wanted. So, so fun. And when I grew up, our backyard was, it wasn't, I'm not going to say hilly, it was slanted. So from the deck to the end of our, to the farthest end of the backyard, there was just a gradual slant that went down. And if I had to guess, it probably, the grade, I don't know percentages of grades, so I'm going to say from the top of the slant to the bottom, there was probably a difference in elevation of 8 feet, something like that. So if you started at the stop and you got a good push, let's say somebody was pushing you, or the snow were particularly slick, you could get some speed. You could get a decent amount of speed all the way to the fence. Now, for me, the best sledding in my book, first off, you got to talk sleds, all right? I have never been a fan, and never was, even as a kid, of the saucer sled, whether be they metal or plastic. I think there are a few reasons. One, I was a chubby kid most of the time. There were times where I was actually a skinny kid, but most of the time I was a chubby kid, and I just wasn't physically comfortable on a saucer. I had to sort of pull my legs in and sort of cram myself into that crisscross applesauce style of sitting, which we didn't call it that then, but no reason to go. And so to be crammed on. And then I also didn't like that you couldn't necessarily control where the saucer went. I understand that's part of the fun. Like, oh, but I like to face forward and really and sort of aim for something or see where I was going. I've always preferred that. I also didn't care for the old-fashioned sled, the wood with the metal rails. You know, your classic It's a Wonderful Life type sled. Although I think in a Wonderful Life, they may have been, at least some of the kids were sledding on shovels, which if you've never done, we did it 1 year. We tried it. And the ice was so packed down that when we got on these shovels, what you would do is you'd put the shovel between your legs and you'd sit on the actual shovel part and then hold onto the handle and kind of pull it back. And you could end up going down a hill that way. And one time we did that and we flew. It was so fast. And I couldn't believe how fun that was. Not comfortable. But man, you just put your legs up and you just, with the giant stick between your legs sticking up, and we flew down this hill. And anyway, the old-fashioned sleds with the, you know, the tracks or whatever, there you can steer them, so that's kind of fun. You grab the two wood planks there. You can either steer with your feet or your hands if you're going ahead first. And you kind of cut through the snow. But I didn't really, those weren't as fun to me as what I think are the best sleds. The plastic toboggan type sleds. These things, you could stretch your legs out. They typically would go really fast, so they were comfortable and thrilling. Yeah, they were so great. And we had a red one. I wish somehow we knew the brand of this thing. This sled lasted us a good 6 years, and in fact, it cracked down the center. There was a huge crack down the center of it, and the sled still worked I'd say at 95% of its capacity. Some snow would get up in that crack and slow you down a little. But other than that, I mean, that thing, we had that thing forever until I think it was my brother Joe tried to build like a go-kart type thing and ruined it. He drilled into it and he affixed it to some lumber. And that was the end of the great red sled. But that sled was great. These toboggan sleds, so awesome. And I think the finest sledding isn't the first day of snow. It's like the second or third, where you've made tracks in the snow and they've had time to harden and freeze over. And now they're just like ice. And you could put that toboggan in that track and just almost slalom or a bobsled your way down. Just so fun. And, man, you'd get such great speed. And sometimes it was a lot of fun if there was something at the bottom of the hill that you had to avoid, because we wouldn't just like a fence. You had to bail off your sled. Pardon me. Oh, you had to bail off your sled before you either slammed into the fence, which at our house were aluminum, or one time at my grandparents' house, I didn't bail, and I didn't just hit the fence. I went under it. There was enough give at the bottom of the fence where my feet shot under the fence and kind of lifted it up a little bit, and I just went right under this fence. And by right under, I mean one of the points of the aluminum scraped my body from shin to face. And I had a huge scrape on my face. And my grandma, none too thrilled with my brother Jeff and I, thought maybe Jeff should be watching me more. Not his fault at all. I didn't bail like I was supposed to. And when I looked in the mirror, this cut, I was young. I was probably 7 or 8. Was so close to my eye that my grandma was really kind of flipping out. She was like, if you had been half a centimeter to the left, you would have lost your eye, that kind of thing. And I think she's right. She's right. At the very least, it would have snagged me by the eyelid, and I would have been stuck for a second. But good stuff. There were other places we would go sledding where you had to bail before you fell into a creek. And I say fell into a creek. You wouldn't just go into the creek. It was like a 6-foot drop. There was like a small cliff and then the creek. And when our friend Spencer went faster than he thought he was going to on a sled, and for whatever reason didn't bail and flew off that 6-foot cliff, and we couldn't even see him because we just saw him, and he disappeared behind the cliff, and then we just heard sploosh. We were on the ground howling. First off, Spencer was a great guy. He was one of my best friends. But bad things always seemed to happen to him. Like, he was kind of the unlucky. There were a lot of times where he was just unlucky. So he was, you know, that guy, that person, girl or guy, whatever, in your group of friends, that it was just like, okay, it's funny if it happened to anybody. It's really funny because it happened to them. And it was really funny because it happened to Spencer. And he climbed back up that like 6-foot wall, and he was so mad at us for laughing as hard as we were. And in all earnestness, he yelled at us. And this was the first time I'd ever heard this word. It's not a curse word or anything like that, but he just yelled, "It's not funny. I have hypothermia." And I didn't know what it meant, but boy, it made us laugh. And he didn't have hypothermia, but I guess if he had laid there for a while, he could have. Oh, hilarious. Just, we loved it. Spencer's also the guy who he had a BB gun, and it was like this rifle, you know, kind of one of those air pump. I don't know that it was airsoft, but it was An air pump thing. You would pump up the pump, I guess, or whatever. And the more you pumped it, the faster the BB would come out. And I don't think they weren't metal BBs. They were like the little plastic ones or whatever. And he had this thing out, and we were like, dude, careful with it. And he goes, oh, it's not loaded. And he goes, see? And he pointed it to the ground, and he shot it. And a plastic BB flew out and hit my buddy Nathan in the foot, and he was only wearing sandals. And Nathan goes, ah! And as quick as anything, the fastest reflexes I've ever seen, yanked the BB gun out of Spencer's hands and immediately started pumping it up. And within 10 seconds, must have pumped it. It feels like 40 times, just as much as he could. Meanwhile, Spencer is running as fast as he can across the yard. And Nathan just he quickly pumped it and very assuredly lifted it, aimed it, and shot Spencer in the back of the neck. And this thing, I mean, you heard it hit Spencer, this little plastic BB, and he screamed and fell to the ground. And Nathan was still, Nathan was angry, so he wasn't really laughing. He was proud. It was so soldier-like or something. He was just like, yep, that's what I wanted to happen. He was very just confident in what he'd done. Spencer was upset, you know, in pain, rolling on the ground. And I don't know if I've ever laughed this. I was laughing so hard that I just couldn't take it. And oh boy, that was awesome. Spencer's also the guy who I feel bad about this to this day. We were having a snowball fight, and he was like, all right, I got to go. I'm going to go have lunch or whatever. And we're like, all right. So I grabbed a bit of snow, and I really packed it in my hands, just making the perfect snowball. And, I mean, I packed this thing tight, and it was wet snow. I mean, this thing, quite honestly, I had no business throwing it. And so, I mean, it felt like a baseball in my hands. And I in my head, I'm going, all right, I'm just going to hit him in the back as he's leaving. And I throw it pretty hard, and it's arcing through the air and heading towards Spencer's back. And then another neighborhood kid, and I don't know if he did this for the ultimate result or not, but he goes, hey, Spencer. And Spencer turned around, and this ball hit him square in the face, just right on the bridge of the nose. And it was so tightly packed that it didn't even explode. It hit him, and it was like he got hit in the face with a baseball. And I ran up to him. I'm laughing only because everybody's okay, but I ran up to him, and he was already crying. I probably sound like a monster for giggling, but it's just one of those memories. And boy, did I get in trouble. He was crying, and there was no consoling him, and he ran home. And his mom came over to my house later and just gave me the business. Man, laid into me so hard. And I had already felt real guilty about it. And it was one of those things where I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have. It would have been funny if it hit him in the back, and I think he would have laughed it off. But in this case, he did get hurt. But 3 hours later, we were playing again. It was one of those things where kids just quickly forgive and forget. But I still have a little bit of guilt about that because it really nailed him. One of the things I also remember fondly on these snow days, my dad would make fried chicken. Every time there was a snow day, he would break out our deep fryer. Like this, it looked like kind of like a crock pot or whatever. And he had this oil, and then he would make up his own batter with flour and whatever and these spices. I don't know what the recipe was, but he would take all kinds, you know, thighs, breasts, legs, all of it, and batter them up. And the deep fryer was pretty small, so we could only do like two or three pieces at once. And it seemed to take hours, him preparing the batter and then egg washing the chicken and then dipping it into the batter and putting them in the basket and lowering it into the fryer, and the smell of the oil and the sound of the popping batter and the chicken frying and everything. For whatever reason, he always did it on a snow day and never any other time. We never had one of his fried chicken dinners any other time but on snow days. And I would have loved to have, I wish I would have asked him, hey, was that something that your mom did or your parents did when you were a kid on snow days or something? Why only snow days? And, what a nice, and his fried chicken was delicious. Homemade. There's nothing like homemade fried chicken. Man, oh man. I've never tried it. And maybe I will. Maybe my mom has that recipe even. But you know what? I question why we only got it on the snow days, but I think I would do the exact same thing. And even though I don't have kids, if it were a snowy day, I think I would save it for that. And the other weird thing is, I never knew how planned it was. I don't remember our pantry or whatever being full of whatever oil he used to cook, whatever spices he used in the batter, and it always seemed like this stuff came out of nowhere. And I should also ask my mom if, when there was talk of potential snow days, if they went out and got the stuff, how premeditated it was, because it always kind of seemed like just spontaneous magic. Just, hey, it's a snow day and we're going to have fried chicken. And you know what else is interesting about it? Now that I think about it, we never asked for it. We never. And in fact, there were mornings it would be a snow day and we were so excited about the sledding and all that stuff, that when you walked in and you saw him preparing, I'd walk in and see him preparing the fried chicken and go, oh, that's right, we get fried chicken because it's a snow day. How weird. I've got to find out how premeditated it was. Or you know what? Maybe that's something that I shouldn't ask about. Maybe that's something I should just remember and kind of let it be a tiny little mystery in my life and in the life of my family. And just go, yeah, man, I don't know how. I'm leaning towards that now. I don't think I want to know all the answers. And, you know, maybe that's something to consider. Maybe when we are being wistful about our past, or we're, remembering things fondly and having little daydreams about our own personal histories and stuff, maybe when these questions come up, we should just sort of swim in them and not worry about the answers. Just enjoy the little mysteries. Man, oh man, did my parents talk about, hey, you know, it might be a snow day, let's have some fried chicken? Or was it serendipitous? Was it, well, let's see if we've got the ingredients, and lo and behold, they had them for whatever. Boy, little things like that, little questions that sometimes I go, ah, man, I wish I would have. I think we all have people in our lives that have died or have left, you know, that we don't talk to anymore for one reason or another. And we go, I really would have liked to have talked to them more about this or that or anything, and learned more about sort of how they operated and what went into some of their decisions, and whether they be something small like making fried chicken every snow day or something big like, when did you know that you were in love with mom or with dad? Stuff like that. And I'm going to suggest that that's the thing that we work on this week. Oh, yes. Because even, you know, these strolls down memory lane, I think they can be fairly bittersweet, where you look back on things with happiness and joy, and then you do get a little sad or emotional because that stuff is gone, that stuff has passed. But I'm a firm believer, and I know my dad was a firm believer that one's life should be celebrated and not their passing shouldn't necessarily be mourned. Just celebrate their life, and it's something my brothers and sisters-in-law and everybody really try to do with my dad. It's only been a little over a year since he passed away, and we certainly try to do that. You've heard me mention him before, and you'll hear me mention him again because he would want to be mentioned. He would want to be talked about. And, I certainly, memories can be difficult, but I really do believe overall they're a blessing. So maybe this week, think about somebody in your life and something you'd really like to know about them. And it can be big or small. And by the way, as I'm saying this, it also sounds a little trite. We've all heard this. Hey, make sure you spend time with the people you love, before it's, for lack of a better term, too late. Ask them questions. Learn about their lives and their history and stuff like that. It does feel a little trite, but I think there's something really to that. Take the time to ask one of your grandparents or your parents or anybody, hey, when we were little, you guys did this, and was it planned or was it not? Or anything you want to know about them. Why did you decide to go into that career field? Why did you decide to join the Army? When did you know that you wanted to ask Dad out on a date? Anything like that. And some of it may seem embarrassing because we tend to forget that our parents and our grandparents are human beings, that they had lives before us, and to a certain extent, after we move out and have our own families, they have lives after us. And sometimes it's hard for us to admit that they've got the same desires and interests as anybody. What I'm saying is don't be embarrassed or ashamed or afraid to talk to somebody this week. It doesn't have to be something major. It can be something minor, like what was your first car and how did you buy it? Anything like that. I think you'll be really happy that you asked. And I also believe the person you're asking would be really happy that you asked too. And they would be really, really happy to share memories with you. So make that the thing you work on this week. Ask somebody you love about themselves. Find out something about them that you don't know. And in fact, that's one of my favorite questions. I've asked it before of people, and it's an easy question to ask, and it's fairly easy to answer because they can choose kind of the topic. Just ask somebody you love, what is something about you that I don't know? It's a very simple question, and I think the answers you get will be fascinating. So give that a shot, and let's hang out again next week.
The United States Soccer Federation presents the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
The place where I, Megan Klingenberg, a World Cup expert, teaches you everything that you need to know for this summer's World Cup.
How special is it that we've been able to follow this young group of guys?
It's been such a roller coaster of emotions.
I think you can feel the intensity.
Quite a bit of time, energy, effort, everything along the way on these guys making the country proud. And I think they will this summer.
The U.S. Soccer Podcast, presented by Henkel. Follow and listen on your favorite platform.